You're listening to PodcastJuice.net.
Hey there, it's me again, your boy Marvo, and I'm back with round two of the Iron Mike Freestyle Battle. We have two new contestants, sophomore right here, and your boy Eli from class 2005. We also have the Bus, Jonathan Hodges, J-Dub, Jeremy Walker, and Steven Jackson, Action Jackson, over at the judges' table. Y'all already know the rules, so we ain't gonna waste no time on that. But look, y'all will have 45 seconds. Please stop when I tell you, or else you will be disqualified. All right, let's get it going. We're gonna start things off with your boy right here, Envy. Let's go.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Geeked Out here on PodcastJuice.net. This is your host, Michael Dean, and I'm joined here with my colleagues, Mr. Q-Storm. How are you?
Well, Mike, I just want to say, you know, you sitting up there doing all your podcasting and you working on Amazon, you missed the big shot. But you know what? You ain't got all the answers, Mike.
Yeah. Shout out to Kanye. I have to talk about that young man as well.
Yeah, should we please do? Let's do. Please.
I don't have all the answers, no. Next up, Big Sexy and Sack. How are you, sir?
I am doing great. I'm looking forward to hearing the thoughts on the films, and especially my favorite grumpy old man, Q-Storm.
All right. Next up, Mr. Anthony. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Loving life. Saw the family. Had some bad food, but...
Oh!
I'm sorry. It's not officially Thanksgiving until you've asked at least twice who cooked that.
All right.
I know what I'm talking about.
Mr. Sean Hill, how are you, sir?
I'm doing well. Hoping to work off some of this Thanksgiving food next week. Been piling it on.
All right. Well, I will say it's great that we all can have Thanksgiving and everyone's doing their thing and we're all working and doing what we want to do, hopefully, and families are good. So that's good stuff. Good stuff. All right. So today, Geeked Out. You heard Q-Storm. He actually referenced Kanye West.
One most impactful artist of our generation. I am Shakespeare in the flesh. Walt Disney, Nike, Google. Now, who's going to be the Medici family and stand up and let me create more? Or do you want to marginalize me till I'm out of my moment?
Or why don't you empower yourself and don't need them and do it yourself?
Halfway.
Take a few steps back to go.
You ain't got the answers, man. You ain't got the answers. You ain't got the answers. You ain't got the answers, Sway.
Kanye.
I've been doing this more than you.
Doing what you ain't got. Come on, chill out.
You
bro.
Ain't got the answers.
Kanye, relax.
You ain't got the answers.
Bro, I'm asking you.
You
a
ain't
question.
Been doing the education.
Bro.
You ain't been doing the education.
Kanye, calm down.
You don't have the answers, though.
Calm down.
Because you're trying to give me advice about something.
No,
you ain't,
no.
You ain't got the answers. You ain't spent $13 million of your own money trying to empower yourself.
Yes, but I spent hundreds of thousands and putting out clothing lines at a smaller degree. All I'm asking you,
but Ralph though. It ain't Ralph
but
level.
Let me ask you this: I'm asking.
What's
you,
the name of your clothing line? We don't know.
Kanye,
you know what I'm saying?
Because I lost money, but that's not
exactly. That and I could lose money on a higher level too.
And that's
don't
what
think
I'm
just
you.
Because
wait, hold
don't
up,
think
hold
because
up,
I
Kanye,
got the most or the least
let
money.
Let me finish my question, dog.
Man, no, man.
Let me hear the question.
You don't
man.
Have the answers.
I'm asking you for the answer. It's a question. Why is it that you can't? You have money.
I just
you have
told
investors.
You I lost the money because I did not have the knowledge
okay,
of how
so
to do it the
have
right
money,
way.
So you don't have the money to do it. That's your answer. You ain't got to turn up, man. This ain't no fucking show, man.
Nah,
I'm talking to you as a homie.
I did.
Recent interview over with Sway on the, was it the morning show? Sway in the Morning over at Shade 45. It was also a very classic interview on The Breakfast Club, Kanye West. And... We weren't planning on talking about this, but I would love to talk about this, and I think we'd do it now before I forget. I saw both of those interviews, and I'm going to say this. I'm more of a fan of Kanye West now after seeing both of those. And I admit that he is crazy.
What?
He is crazy.
What?
Yes. He's out there, but I like the fact that he has the balls enough to come on these shows, particularly The Breakfast Club, where they go at him hard. Charlamagne, on record, you know, clowning Kanye, talking about his contradictions. He doesn't bite his tongue. And the fact that he was able to go on that show and stand up there and take the heat, you know, I like that. I think artists need to do that. Whether you agree with Kanye or not, most artists would be too scared to go on a show like that where there's a guy on there who will ask you anything and doesn't care. He's not going to sit here and kowtow to you. I like that he had the balls to do that. I like that he went on Sway. Yeah, he was out of the pocket. And I'm going to say he is crazy, but I respect him. He believes in whatever the hell he's talking about. I can give him that. I was already a fan of his music for the most part, the early stuff. You know, I wasn't really into him personally. I just didn't look into him like that. But for 2013 and the type of music and the way that the game is played, he's playing it very well. I will give him that. I may not care for his actions and stuff, but he's, I don't know, when did he first come out? It was early 2000?
2004.
That's his first album. And it was, you know, he was started out as kind of a background producer, ghost producing. Now he is at the forefront of this madness. He's playing the game very well. I give him that. But that said, Q.
Yeah.
What did you think of the interview there with Sway and how that was handled?
Well,
you sound far away, sir.
Oh, I'm sorry. Hang on a sec. Is that better?
A little bit.
Okay. Well, you know, I put on my Facebook wall, or I think, or maybe I responded to someone else's post that I thought there was a lot of truth. There was some truth in what he was saying, but it was so obvious that it didn't deserve saying. In other words, he was saying that, you know, we're all beholden to those people who basically hold all the money, the gatekeepers, if you will. And it's like, we all know that we're all playing under those same rules. But someone like him, he has a far more advantage than most of us in getting anything launched. So given that all the scales are equaled, to me, that interview was just another exposure of his rampant ego and him being such a, I'm not going to curse on your show, but being such a little bitch that I can't respect a man who compares himself to Shakespeare, and I forget who else he compares himself to.
Disney, see, Jobs.
Andy Warhol.
Andy Warhol. You can speak out against the machine, against the powers that be. But when you start putting yourself up, I mean, this is a man who's compared himself to Jesus Christ as well. So, I don't know. He gets no love from me. I mean, I also can't respect a man that would diss his own child with such a stupid name. So, I think the dude needs help. And I believe someone wrote that they suspected that he went off the deep end when his mother died.
Yes.
And he feels guilty because of that, because he introduced her to the fast life. Be that as it may, I mean, the guy needs to be put in check. He's not all that.
Okay. All right.
What gets me is, and Charlamagne said it best. He's like, we don't care about these rich nigga problems. Like, are you kidding me? He's up there complaining about not getting a fair shake from these high-end designers, from Nike, not getting a good deal from Nike. Louis Vuitton ain't trying to hear from him and all that other stuff. And it's like, I'm just like, why do we care? You're not a designer. You're somebody who has ambitions to be a designer, and you're not trained to do that. You know, you put out these one shoes, and he's talking about nobody had these feelings about shoes since the Jordans came out and the Yeezys gave it to him. I'm like, dude, seriously, nobody really cares. Nobody cares. And the thing is, he has.
I guess he shut him down. He shut Anthony down.
The Kanye machine got him.
Kanye caught up to him.
You don't have the answers, Anthony, apparently.
Well, I'll jump in here real quick. I wish Kanye would adopt the Prince motto of the 80s and let the music speak for itself. I'm a big Kanye defender on Facebook. I know a lot of people always post, you know, he's a douche, da-da-da-da-da. And I always ask, well, have you heard My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, that album? No, I don't listen to his music. I said, well, you can, I mean, yes, he's a douche when he speaks, but if you like music, if you like hip hop, you have to, you know, his work should speak for itself, basically. I mean, I always want to just say, Kanye, shut up, man. Just most of the time with him, you can pretty much know what's going on in his mind if you listen to his lyrics. And when he's just able to speak unfiltered, yeah, he goes off the rails. Sometimes I'm like, why am I even listening to this guy? I mean, I haven't personally listened to the interview that you guys are talking about, just because I just, you know, with music artists, I just like to let the music and the lyrics speak for themselves.
Right.
Because usually when they open their mouths, whoo, watch out.
Yeah, he's, you know, and he's sort of making this comparison, excuse me. And I kind of agree with it. There are parts of what he's doing in his interviews that are very Tupac-ish. You know, if you unromanticize Tupac and you really look at his interviews, he was really talking a lot of wild, ridiculous rant-type stuff in his interviews that, you know, the media always, they wanted to interview him because they knew you get him riled up, he's going to say some outlandish shit. And I do think on one level, Kanye is doing the same thing. It's just that he's alive and he's a dick, so it's easy to hate him for that. He's not. If he was dead, they would look at all of that stuff as, some people would look at the, oh, you know, it's sort of a lure to it. But the fact that he is very present in the media and he is very much alive and he's very boastful, he's going to come off as ass, rightfully so. But I do see some comparisons between, and I know exactly what he's doing. If you listen to that interview, I mean, he tells you right up, I am doing this on purpose. I am the asshole. I am blah, 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 blah. But the interview with Sway is interesting because there's a point in the interview where basically Kanye's screaming, loud talking at Sway, where he's to a point where Sway is like, yo, slow it down, partner. Like, you know, I'm paraphrasing. He says, we can turn these mics off, you know, and handle this a different way. Because if you're not going to come on here, you know, getting ridiculous. And even at the end of the interview, he says, you know, they're all hugged up and everything. He says, yo, man, don't ever shout out me like that. Basically, I'll whoop your ass. Don't let these people get you gassed up.
I came away from an interview with far more respect for Sway than anything for Kanye. And to Kanye, yeah. I would say, maybe if you shut your fucking mouth, maybe some of these people would listen to you.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I agree completely.
Sorry about that, fellas. Had a cord malfunction.
No, it's not good. It's all good. So that was the Kanye thing. He's been in the news recently. Just wanted to kind of put that out there. I just thought it was very interesting and funny and or sad at the same time. But, you know, you said that you wish he'd had the Prince sort of take on the media. I personally think if a Kanye West did like Prince and didn't do interviews, he would not be who he is today. That's my personal opinion. You can't just be about the music today. Like, you'd be forgotten. And I think his outlandishness, you know, the whole thing he did with, was it Taylor Swift?
yes.
I mean, yeah. that's a part of his stick now, is to be that guy. And I think that's sort of kept him somewhat relevant. I mean, yeah, his music, I think, listen to this, I'm not a fan of his later albums, but I do recognize that they're genius moves behind what he's doing. I mean, he's brave enough to go totally against what his fans expect from him musically and not seem to care. Like, and it seems to work on a level where he can talk his way through, like, this new album. I've heard bits and pieces, and I understand that it is way different than,
oh yeah,
you know,
yeah,
the other stuff. But I think he can speak and act his way through that being, could be considered a flop, but it still is going to sell what it needs to sell, and he's still going to pack arenas because you're going to, you know, I'm not going to lie. His show, from what I saw, that concert is a goddamn show. Like, he definitely has put his heart and soul into that and spent a lot of money on that. That's, you know, that for a rap thing, that has come, I mean, that's like, and I herald, like, Prince's Love Sexy is something great. It was way beyond Love Sexy.
Yeah.
You know, he's on some other stuff. So I do have to give him his credit for that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, you touched on one thing I just want to mention real quick. The Taylor Swift thing, you know, that happened shortly after his mom died. I don't, I mean, maybe 3 months. I don't even think it was that long. But
I didn't know that.
Yeah, yeah, it was shortly after. So after that, that's when he made My Beautiful Dark Twisted Fantasy, and he like poured his heart. It's almost like his Love Sexy. I mean, he poured his heart and soul into that record, and I actually thought it was so cathartic that coming after that, I thought we were going to see a kinder, gentler Kanye, because he addressed his mother's. I mean, he addressed everything that was going on, breaking up with his fiance and all that stuff. But it seems like he came out on the other end of it worse than he was before his mother passed. That's just my take.
But you know what? I'm curious to know. I don't know if anyone saw this interview right after his mother passed away. If Jay Leno's got something on him, because the Kanye that I see now, I remember, I'll never forget, Jay Leno asked him a question. Do you think you're, because you're right, the Taylor Swift thing happened around his mother's death.
Yeah.
Around that same time. And Jay Leno asked him, do you think your mother will be proud of your behavior?
I remember that.
And I'm thinking, okay, they're going to have to call security on Jay's ass. And the guy sat there like a wounded puppy. I'm like, really? Now that's when you come out swinging.
Well, you know, maybe no one asked him the question. You know, maybe it actually hit him that, you know, maybe his mom wouldn't be proud of what he's done.
Yeah, he's definitely an interesting individual. I give him that much. Definitely got to give him that. All right, so let's move right along. I wanted to talk about one of the new movies that just came out. It's called Old Boy. And it is a remake of the original Old Boy. I think the original was a Korean movie, if I'm not mistaken.
Yes.
Okay. And I want to say that it actually is based on, I think manga is a Japanese word, but whatever is the Korean equivalent of that, it was a comic book, and essentially say that. And I think that's where it originally started from. So on one hand, you could argue that this is a comic book movie. But with that said, Old Boy was a very cult classic movie. And I will admit that I have not seen the entirety of Old Boy. I maybe have only watched the first 30, 40 minutes of the original. And that was years ago. So now there is a remake, 2013, and it's actually directed by Spike Lee. Interestingly enough. Now, people will feel how they need to feel about remakes, and I totally understand that. But I'm going to tell you about this film from a perspective of a person who is not familiar with the original movie. And I don't want to spoil this movie either. I don't know if you, have you guys seen the original Old Boy? Anybody seen that?
No, I haven't seen it.
No.
I haven't seen it, but I know the story.
Okay. What about you, Anthony?
I have not, but
okay. So I will be very clear. I'm not going to spoil this. I'll set this up. So Old Boy, it stars Josh Brolin. I'm not saying Josh Brolin. Yeah. Elizabeth Olsen is in this as well. Sam Jackson has a small part in this as well. And actually, I want to say, I didn't pick up on this when I saw it, but I think the villain guy is the same guy from District 9 and Elysium.
Yes. Yeah. Charlton Copley.
Okay, that guy is, he was very hard to recognize in movies to me. Like, it didn't hit me when I watched it. But anyway, this movie is basically about Josh Brolin's character, and he seems to be some sort of ad exec or ad salesperson or something. And you can kind of see in the beginning, like, this guy, he's kind of a douchebag, like, he's a scumbag kind of dude. And there's a scene where his, to set it up, his boss is stressing the importance that he has to close this deal they got coming up. And sell this guy on some advertising or something. And so you see him at a restaurant, and I don't know the brother's name. He's in The Wire, real kind of tall, skinny, bald-headed black dude. He's always the police chief type dude.
Lieutenant Daniels.
Yes, Mr. Daniels. They're at this restaurant, and he's trying to sell Lieutenant Daniels on this deal. And his girlfriend, Lieutenant Daniels, I'm using his Wire name, but his girlfriend, fine lady, I don't know who she is, but she's like kind of like, yeah, he's got great ideas, just go along with him. And dude basically saying, you know what, you got a deal, let's do this. And so the brother gets up, goes to the bathroom, and Josh Brolin's character, he's such a scumbag, he starts, hey, how you doing, girl? You know, thank you for, you know, kind of bigging me up to this guy and whatever. And he basically say, I tell you what, why don't me and you go hook up, you know, leave homeboy, and let me go ahead and bang it out. And she's like, what? She's like, I wasn't telling you, I wasn't trying to help you because I want to get with you. And you get the picture that they have some sort of back history. She's like, I don't want anything to do with you. So the quicker that I can get him to go along with this deal, you can be, you know, we can get away from you. And while he's saying all this, and she ends up at the end, she's like saying, I'd rather fuck a corpse. And right when she says this, her man comes back, and he's obviously heard what's being said. And he is like, you going to come in here and disrespect my woman, and la, 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 la. You know, basically saying it's over. You know, there's not going to be a deal. Bah. And so Josh Brolin walks away. He messed up, and his whole job and this company was riding on this deal, so he just blew it, right? So he's just gonna, he just gets drunk, and they show this whole thing. He is just drunk to the level of just disgusting. I'm like, they show some stuff in here that even made me, I was like, ah, come on, man. And he eventually meets this Asian chick as he's walking through the streets drunk, and he wakes up at this apartment, a hotel. And as he wakes up, he realizes he can't leave. Like, the door is locked. There's no handle on the door. And basically, he is stuck in this room. And I would just say that he's in this room for 20 years.
Wow.
And all he has is, like, there's a TV in there. And they slide him food underneath the door. Whoa. And so he's in that room for 20 years. And while he's in that room, you see that his one thing, they put some sleeping gas or something. They put him to sleep, and they come in here and shave him, and they take his DNA and semen and all this stuff. And then there's this program that comes on, kind of like Unsolved Mysteries or whatever. Or it was a news report. His wife, ex-wife, is raped and murdered, and the suspect is him because they have all this DNA there. And obviously, he's been in this room that time, but the world thinks he did it. So he's been framed for the rape and murder of his ex-wife. And they had a 3-year-old daughter who was unharmed, and she has to go into foster care. So he's sitting.
Hey, Mike.
Yeah, can you hear me?
I'm just curious real quick.
Go ahead.
Please tell me they don't show them taking the semen. How do they do that?
Okay, ill.
Well. There's a reason. There's a reason how they show how they get that. I'll leave that for the movie.
Okay.
This is an over the top movie.
So. See, what this tells me between this movie and 12 Years a Slave, this tells me just don't go out drinking with anybody.
Very, very true. Very true.
Moral to the story.
And so that's sort of his. And I'll kind of leave it there. He eventually, and I think this is the poster that you see. He is eventually released from this room, and I believe he goes in the room in 1993 and comes out in 2013. And it's interesting because you can kind of see some of the footage on the TV. You know, you see the towers go down, you see Mayor Nagin, you know, Katrina, you see Clinton being president, you see Obama and all that sort of stuff. So you kind of get an idea. He's sort of learning about things from watching TV, but he is released by being put into this giant sort of suitcase in the middle of this grassy field, and they release him. Now I'm going to stop. That's as much as I am going to say. I would just say that this movie becomes severely twisted. And Q-Stone, you may know what it's about if you read the synopsis and spoilers. I didn't know what it was about. And this movie is extremely graphic. This movie is also very violent and cartoonishly violent. I would actually say that this movie, I started to realize that this guy is Batman. Not only because, one, he could actually play Bruce Wayne, but his character is as if he is.
Is Josh Brolin?
Yes. He looks like, I could see him being Batman easily. It'd be an older Batman, Bruce Wayne.
I can see that.
There's parts in this movie where he is Batman. And I'm talking about the ass-kicking Batman, Arkham Asylum. You know, it's a point in this movie where it just becomes cartoonish to me because I'm like, really? How does he? I mean, he's literally taking on hordes of dudes with a hammer. And I don't think Spike Lee, first of all, he's not the best guy to be shooting that sort of stuff.
I was just going to ask that. How did Spike, because he's never done, well, I guess Inside Man, but he's never really done like a true kind of action. So how did he, without spoiling anything, how did he handle the...
It comes off cartoonish to me.
Do you think that was intentional, or do you think that that was just his directorial ineptitude of being able to direct that kind of material?
I think the scenes where they have him fighting the hordes of dudes was intentionally cartoonish, I hope. Because there's other parts in the movie where it's not cartoonish, and it's very, like, grisly graphic. But with that said, I could easily see the antagonist guy could be the Joker. Easily be the Joker, be the most extreme Joker, but the Joker slash Riddler nonetheless, and Brolin being Batman. But this would be the most R-rated, hardcore version of those characters ever. And if you think, I thought like that, I was like, kind of like, this is dope. Like, this is crazy, but it's dope. But go on to say, this movie was, I say it's disturbing because the subject matter is disturbing. And it doesn't pull any punches. Now, I'm going to finish this to say that I like the movie. Now, I didn't see the original, so I'm not going to be one of those guys that shits on it because it doesn't compare to the original. But just seeing this for myself fresh, I like this movie. This is a very dark movie, over the top, ultra violence. Some of it's darkly funny. And I like the little touches that Spike puts into it. I can see there's little things that probably if another director did it, he wouldn't have included those certain things. But it is in no way a Spike Lee joint or an overtly Spike Lee film. That's, you know, the classic shot where the guy's sliding on the ground, you know, in Spike movies, is not in this movie. I was looking for that, and I didn't see it at all. But I still enjoyed this movie. It didn't really matter who it doesn't really matter who directed it. This is a crazy movie. The premise of it and the way it plays out was going to be crazy no matter what. And it's not a mainstream movie. This is a movie that would be a cult classic. You know, you don't really see movies like this get wide sort of releases like this, in my opinion. But I enjoyed it. I think Old Boy is definitely, if you like movies and you want to see some crazy stuff, you should go check this movie out. It's not, you know, it's not a blockbuster. When I went to go see this, literally, there were two other people in the theater when I went in. And that was Friday at like 2:00. And that theater was packed. The overall theater, everybody was going to see Hunger Games and all this other stuff. But there was only three people in there. And so I imagine this will not be a very receptive movie.
It's already flopped.
It doesn't surprise me.
Yeah,
but it's nonetheless. I think you should definitely go check it out. It's an interesting movie.
Oh, I'm going to see it tomorrow.
Yeah,
no doubt.
I would say it's probably Spike's darkest, you know, movie. And again, I don't know if it's interesting to see why they got Spike to do this, and it's also interesting to me why they did this movie. Because it is a remake, and it's obviously this movie is not going to do anything at the box office. It's just too crazy. You know, it deals with incest, and anything that sort of deals with that and rape and stuff, it's just a hard, and you don't have any big stars in it. So they had no reason not to go over the top, which they do. They ain't nothing to lose. So there you go. Oh boy, definitely interesting movie.
You mentioned there was the Spike scene or Spike shot of somebody dragging along the ground. What is that?
You ever notice in Spike Lee movies where he always has that scene where it looks like a person is almost floating, and I think they shoot it pointing up toward the character, and you just kind of glide through?
Yeah. Okay.
No, well, you know how it's called a dolly tracking shot, and they're actually sitting on the camera as it's being pulled on the dolly track.
Mm-hmm. Instead of walking. Okay.
Instead of walking, yeah. So it gives the effect that they're
floating through something. Yeah, but that was not in this movie, and I was really looking forward to it just to see how they would do it. But I don't remember seeing it at all.
Well, he didn't do an Inside Man either.
Yeah, I was going to say, it wasn't in his.
Yeah, and it didn't even say, I thought maybe it was going to say a Spike Lee joint. It didn't say that at all. I mean, definitely, it had 40 Acres and a Mule, but if nobody had said anything about Spike Lee, you would never know. And, you know, you would, if anything, as a black person, you might be kind of like, yeah, you kind of see a little more sort of background black representation and different little nods to things that they normally wouldn't pay attention to. And I think that was Spike, but yeah, this, I always joke, like, they could have marketed this movie and at least tricked black people to go see it, because the term old boy could have been a slang, like, where's old boy at? You know what I'm saying?
that's what I thought it was initially.
Yeah, see, you could have probably tricked people to go, but they would have, I think most black people would have been freaked out by what they saw. But anyway, there's old boy. Let me mention real quickly, and we'll get into something else. The Wolverine. Me and Q-Storm did a show about this a while ago when it came out, and we both sort of liked the movie at the time. There is a new version of the movie. I think it's called Extended Unleashed version or something, and it comes out December 3rd with the home video release. It may actually be on demand now, but it's essentially an unrated version of that movie with extended scenes, and somebody is in a wind tunnel or something. Sean.
Yeah, that's probably me.
That's you. So it's an extended version of the Wolverine, and it's not rated, but I would call it an R-rated thing. So what does it add? It adds a little more character work with the overall main characters of the movie. You see a little bit more background on what's going on, which was one of the things when I initially talked about it, I kind of just felt like stuff would just kind of happen kind of fast, and it wasn't too clear on why certain things were going on. This makes sure to sort of explain some of the background characters' motivations. This also, there's a lot more cussing in this movie. This also, we were talking about, you want to see Wolverine just go raw on these people, like be Wolverine. This movie does that. They put in a lot of blood in this. They show all the contact and ripping people apart. There's the scene that has the ninjas. There is an entire part of that ninja fight scene that is cut from the theatrical release that is back in this. And it's a badass scene too, let me tell you. I mean, I'll just say this. It is so badass, and harking back to the comic book, he literally puts a cigar in his mouth while surrounded and fighting all these ninjas, and just badassery, just like, ah, and a lot of blood in that scene. That's just amazing. And yeah, and so it makes the movie, I've watched this twice in the last 48 hours. That's how much I really liked it. I was just like, man, why didn't they, and why I'm mad, like, why didn't they have the balls to just release it like that? Why even shoot all those scenes? Literally, one of the highlights of the movie would have been the ninja battle, and totally don't put it in there. The other part, which I haven't seen, and I'm going to wait till I buy it, there is apparently a scene where they a shot where they show Wolverine. He doesn't have it on, but the yellow Wolverine costume from the comics is in the movie.
What?
There is a screenshot online if you go look.
Oh yeah, they had that. That was one of the extras on it. They had the scene where instead of them just flying off on the plane, she brought a suitcase, and he opens it up, and there's brown and tan Wolverine suit.
Yep. I was like, man, if they had the balls to let him put that on. Apparently, there's also an alternate ending that is on the release as well. But I would just say, that made the movie. I liked it before. I really loved it there. I can only hope they have the balls to make the next movie and just make it just like that. Make it R-rated. Fuck it. Like, that's where Wolverine, he was a badass in that movie. Like, even more so than he already was in the original version. I know Q-Storm, if you see it, you will love it. Like,
yeah, I love the original version, so I can't wait to see this.
Yeah, it's really fun. It's fun.
I'm not opposed to how they released it, you know, as far as they have the PG-13 so they can get their wide audience. And then, you know, it does help with their DVD sales if there is this unrated, bloody, gory version. I'm not that opposed to it.
I just wish they had put – and, you know, there's an interview. There's a great interview with the director, and the guy asked him point blank, like, why didn't you – which one is your original vision? Like, why didn't you put that – and he basically, you know, he's basically saying, well, they're kind of both. I don't know if he's BSing, but he's like, they're both my vision. He's like, yeah, there was a lot that I wanted to put in that movie theater, but they wouldn't allow me to do R. So I had to cut it, unfortunately. But I'm glad we shot it. We definitely shot it that way. That's the way we're gonna give it to you here. And like I said, I love the first version, but this one, I was like, okay, I like action and I like, you know, badass. It becomes this fantastic ninja samurai Wolverine movie now. You know, just amazing. So anyway, enough of that. We want to go and revisit. I'm going to switch it up. We're going to go back to The Hunger Games. Me and Sean saw it, loved it, talked about it. You can check out the last episode. Q-Storm.
Yes, sir.
I hear that there's a little disagreement on viewpoint, and so I want to get your opinion here. Go ahead.
Well, let me take it back about, man, maybe 4 years. It was me, you, and Big Sexy, and we were reviewing, I forget what we were talking about, but Terminator 2 came up. I don't know if you remember this, Big Sexy, and you basically shit all over the movie Terminator 2.
Sorry.
I said that I agreed with you that when I first saw Terminator 2, I hated it because you saw the first Terminator, and it was about a Terminator chasing John Connor or Sarah Connor at that time and trying to kill Sarah Connor. And John Connor was sent back to protect her. Okay. So basically the story was Android chases defenseless person. And he had Terminator 2 come out Judgment Day. And I'm thinking, oh, we're going to get some big global wars, battles, so on and so forth. And basically the story was Terminator comes back from the future to kill John Connor. Another Terminator protects him. And so you have Android chasing innocent person once again. Same thing with this. When I saw The Hunger Games, I was completely underwhelmed. I did not like it. I, first of all, just had a hard time enjoying it because of the subject matter. And I was just amazed at how many parents that I knew were like, oh, I love that movie. I'm like, you know, it was about kids killing kids, right? It was amazing to me that this movie had gained any traction in our public, in society, okay, because it's about kids killing kids. So I'm like, all right, I'm not going to go see the next one. I think I've seen all I need to see. And then we reviewed it last week, and everyone was telling me, oh, well, it's the Empire Strikes Back of this generation, this greatest action. I was like, oh, okay, dope. Let me go check it out. It was the same story. It was the exact same story. So I don't know what I saw that you guys saw. Now, I will say this. Two things I'll give this movie. Jennifer Lawrence is a beast, okay? I put in my review that she deserves the Sigourney Weaver Ripley Award for best action heroine of the decade or whatever you want to say, okay? And I also liked that they spoiler alert. I mean, it's not too much of a spoiler, but in this Hunger Games, it's not kids that are being hunted down. It's the previous victors of Hunger Games that are being hunted. And I love the different age ranges. That brought something new to the table, that this really is a sick society where this woman who looks like she's in her 80s is expected to compete in the Hunger Games. But I liked it. I thought in this movie you got to kind of know the characters a little bit more that are going to be participating in the games. But outside of that, I was so – first of all, the first 45 minutes was all – I mean, it was all kind of set up to the games. It was interesting, but it was all pretty much set up to the games. And then the last 30, 40 minutes or so, because this is a pretty long movie, I felt like I was watching maybe a slightly more interesting version of the first film. It was The Hunger Games all over again. And that is something – that's the last thing I wanted to see. And then this twist ending, which I'm not going to give away, was such a letdown. I'm like, that's it? Really? That's supposed to be my kids' version of Empire Strikes Back?
Okay, well,
nobody said it was the kids' version.
I'm the one that said Empire Strikes Back. Let me be clear. I never said that it was the same quality as Empire Strikes Back.
I'm being tongue in cheek.
Okay. It structurally reminded me of Empire Strikes Back, where you're taking, you know, a group of core characters, you're adding an additional layer to them, you're upping the stakes or the ante, so to speak, in their situation. It kind of culminates in an open-ended ending where it's kind of a placeholder for the next film. So that's just what I meant by being similar to Empire Strikes Back, but in no way is it.
I was gonna say to me, if not you, but if anyone had said to me, this is similar to The Matrix Reloaded, that I could see, because I didn't care for that movie either.
Yeah, I agree with that. That ending did kind of remind me of Matrix Reloaded. Her waking up and all these dire things are going on.
But I just want to ask. I want to ask the panel. We had a story that involved in the first 40 minutes. About people starving in the outer districts, possibly a revolution is gonna occur, and you have tributes who are pulled out. Only thing is, these are tributes who won the previous Hunger Games, and then you have the Hunger Games quarter, well, whatever it's called. So you basically have the Hunger Games again. What did you see? What was it that made this movie so much more interesting than the first one? Because it was the same thing.
Well, for me, I would say that the intensity of what's going on is ramped up to the point where I felt like, okay, that's what I said earlier, when they pulled that old man out there and just shot him down in front of everybody, I was like, oh, okay, they ain't playing around this year. Like, before, you know, this is new people, but now the after effects of what happened to the in the first movie are interesting to me. I wasn't a fan of the first movie at all, but I liked the premise. I just didn't think that they handled it right. But I feel here they take this premise that I like and they've added the point where it seems more extreme. Like, I like this whole sort of fighting against this totalitarian or dystopian sort of government that's, you know, putting people down and sort of using the media to keep people's mind twisted away from the facts. And here's this sort of hero sort of rising up and, you know, unbeknownst to herself, people are gravitating or using her as sort of a linchpin for this whole Rebels thing. I like that type of stuff. And again, the games to me, yeah, it was the same. It was another Hunger Games in a sense, but it wasn't kids. And just to me, the way that it was filmed and the way the action, I was all into it where I was bored with the first one. Here, I think it's just the director and the way they chose to go about it. It was exciting to me. I liked the thing that it was spinning, the monkeys, all that stuff. I thought it was, I mean, I was jumping out of my seat, so I loved it.
Let me ask you this question then. I guess the core concept I don't understand. So the whole thing falls flat for me. What I don't understand is, you know, hello, can you hear me?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay. President Snow is saying that, you know, okay, we have to put them down. They're going to cause a rebellion. They were going to kill each other with the berries. So they had to pretend to really be in love with each other. It seems like to me, what is the point of all that? Because if I live in a society where my kids could get killed in this Hunger Games, that right there alone is the catalyst for a rebellion. What is this whole thing about? Oh, you have to pretend you're in love still, and because you didn't kill each other, you may cause a revolution. I mean, they're starving. That's the cause of a revolution right there. I didn't get this whole intricate thing about this whole illusion. What was the point of that? It just makes no sense to me.
Well, I think for the core characters, why they have to sort of go along with this, there's their families involved. Like, she can't just say, I don't want to do it, because if she does, they'll kill her parents and her sister.
I understand.
Why does
it matter to the president that they pretend to still be in love? What I'm saying is, it's the act of killing the children that they need to stop if they don't want a rebellion. Not these two acting like they're not in love. I don't get it.
Well, I think my interpretation of what was going on with the president and that other guy, you know, the head game master dude, is that they don't. They could just take them out, if I'm mistaken in what you're saying. But again, they would become martyrs to the people.
Exactly.
And I think the whole point was they was going to try to discredit them to the people. I think it's the point of this part of this movie, or that first part of the movie, was to parade them around and make people hate them, as opposed to people were sort of, again, using that girl as this symbol of freedom. And he didn't want that. Yeah, he could have just shot her down, but then they would have, the rebels would have went crazy on them. That's my opinion.
I guess what I'm saying is, any one of the living tributes who survived the Hunger Games, you could say the same thing about them as well. Any of them could be seen as possible linchpins for a revolution. So what was the difference with her and PETA? That's what I don't get. Any one of the other tributes could be the linchpin for a revolution.
Well, I think it's the fact that I'll say my piece and I'll be done. I think it's the fact that she was shown in the media. Again, it was like a soap opera where they played up the relationships that she had with that dude, and the people fell in love with that. I mean, you see that again throughout this movie. Like, their whole, even though they weren't never really in love with each other blatantly, but they used that as how they got tributes and help from the rest of society to send them little treats or whatever. But that was the whole point. People fell in love with them. The media that they had no choice but to be a part of was going to play up that relationship, even though they weren't really in a relationship with each other. But that was a part of keeping people dumb down to what was really going on. I mean, I guess you could say they were trying to do sort of say, like, you know, media uses people to sort of keep you away from paying attention to what's really going on. That's kind of what I got from their characters.
So you're saying that because the people saw these two tributes in love, it would keep them in line?
That's what I got from it. I'll let somebody else go ahead and speak.
Yeah, that makes no sense at all.
Go ahead, Sean, or whoever.
No, I agree with what you were saying, Mike. It's just saying the media basically made them out to be a certain way, and that's just another way to control the people. You know what I'm saying? So
that I don't understand that. Just explain that to me. I'm starving.
How do you not understand that? They make it blatantly obvious that that's what's going on.
Let me ask this question. I'm starving. I can't feed my family. I'm poor. I'm eating rats for dinner, okay?
Right.
Yet I look at PETA, and Katniss, and all of a sudden I'm supposed to be, oh, well, they're in love. Everything's good.
Well, here's the thing. I think you have two parts of the society going on. You have the people that are in the impoverished areas, probably the majority of people who PETA comes from and who she represents, that she took the place of her sister to go fight in the games. And I think you have people that know that. You also have those people, and that's what I think what the president had a problem with, who knew that she did things in the last Hunger Games to sort of sacrifice herself, or she cared and tried to save other people, like that little black girl, if I'm not mistaken, which makes that black girl a martyr in her hometown. And those people know that Katniss tried to help that girl, and she becomes a hero at that. Then you have the other sort of society, which may be the 1%, who really watch those games because it's entertaining to them, and they don't really give a F about the regular people. But for them, the whole they're in love part plays right into, yeah, this is great. You know, the guy that host is really talking to are those people. But I think that the regular people that are struggling, they know what's popping. And that's the whole point of the movie, I think, is that you have the people who are really impoverished and struggle. They see the facade. And that's why they're gravitating to Katniss, because they don't think that she's really a part of their thing.
But Mike,
the president's plan is make it seem as if she is not of the people. Make it seem as she is a part of this machine, and she is in love with that dude, and she's a supporter of these games and everything that it's about, so that those people will hate her and they won't use her as a icon for this movement. That's just what I got from the movie.
So does that mean that the people in the outer district, do they support the games?
Again, they don't have a choice. They are forced to.
Right, they don't have a choice. Games. Right, exactly.
So that's what I'm saying. They're not going into the whole relationship part, and that was the point. He is making her be about that relationship so that those people would hate her, because it would look like she's a part of them. She's a part of this. She is with this world. She wants you to be forced into being about this. That's what he wanted to have happen. I think the point where the guy says that she's pregnant and all these other things are starting to force the games to be stopped. And you see the other tributes, they don't want this shit to go on either, but they ain't got no choice. That's my point of it. But I think it seems painfully obvious that that's what's going on. It's not a deep movie.
None of the people in the outer districts, as far as I got out of the movie, none of them like the Hunger Games because their children are involved.
Exactly.
So, right. So what I'm saying is, if Katniss and PETA never had been chosen, so you wouldn't have all this love stuff. the people in the districts eventually probably would have revolted anyway because they don't like the fact that the Hunger Games exist. So I don't know what this intrigue is about. Well, their romance is going to keep the people at bay. I don't get it.
Okay. I don't see the point, but I understand what you're saying.
Well, if I could chime in.
Go ahead, sir.
I kind of liked it. When I saw the first one, I thought I was kind of disgusted with that. These are kids killing each other. And, you know, you told me, you said last week that there's no kids dying in this one. I was like, okay. But when I watched it, it didn't have the same, it didn't resonate with me. It didn't give me the same passion as watching those kids try to kill each other as these adults did. So, overall, I liked the movie, but I enjoyed it better when it was the children fighting in the Hunger Games.
See, I'm going to put it this way. Going back to, I just finished reading 12 Years a Slave, so I keep going back to slavery, okay? So let's say I'm on the plantation, starving, getting beaten, whipped every day, right?
Yep.
But then the master comes out and he pulls out two of the house slaves, the house Negroes. He pulls out a man and a woman and says, well, these two are in love, so you all be happy now. I still wouldn't be happy because I'm getting beaten and whipped every day. So why would this love affair make me complacent?
That's well, what I guess, this is the last. But the point of it is that it's not that they're necessarily in love. It's the point that you would choose to go along with the tour and be a part of it. Those slaves would call you a house nigga. That's what I'm saying. So for the people, the slaves, they knew it was bullshit. Them being in a relationship, they don't want you to believe. They know you ain't in a relationship. But the fact that you seem to not be speaking out against this will make you not be a part of a spearhead of the movement.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
I hear what you're saying. I still don't see how that would prevent a revolt from happening because my kids are getting killed anyway.
Well, it doesn't.
Every year my kids are going to get killed, right, so I might revolt anyway.
It doesn't prevent it. But again, this story is about those two characters. It's not the overall movement. So again, you have to zero it in on she's basically being the spearhead for the movement. You know, and that's, I can see what you're saying, but I know. You don't have to. Go ahead.
As I cleverly wrote at the end of my review, as for this Hunger Games, I wish I hadn't gone back for seconds.
Okay. All right. Any other thoughts on the Hunger Games?
Well, let me ask Q this. Q, yes, when sir. When you saw it and you mentioned, you know, it was too similar to the first one, are we talking similarities like the first and second Home Alone movie? Is it the same movie or is there something else in it just with the same things?
Just going back to the Terminator, there were different elements in this which were good, but the core story was exactly the same. The core, it was about these people having to compete in these vicious games. And the only difference was that they threw different obstacles at them. The fog thing was pretty cool. I like that. But the monkeys, that was just After Earth to me. I was completely bored at that.
All right.
You know, so basically, to me, it was the same story, the same central story.
All right, there you have it. Hunger Games debate continues. We're going to move on. We got to keep moving. Mr. Anthony, I think you wanted to bring up quickly, you finally got a chance to see The Best Man Holiday. What was your takeaway on that?
Well, I don't, it's not going to be quickly, actually.
Oh, go. Hell it.
I just wanted to bring up that, first, before I get into it, Malcolm Lee, Spike's little cousin, they have him quoting saying that it's not that he doesn't like Tyler Perry, he's just not a fan of his movies, and that he's not putting together movies for art, he's doing it to put out a product, and that they're not good. And I say, my brother, then you better come out with a better film than Best Man Holiday.
Oops.
Wow. All right.
Speak
on it.
My problem with there's a lot of problems with this film. One, it was too damn long. It suffered from that Judd Apatow syndrome. Yes. I understand you guys talked about there were so many endings. It's just like it's like he crams so much into it. Like, I got to tell my story. This is the story I want to tell. But then he leaves. But if this is if like this is the tale I want to tell because I'm not going to get another chance. But then he leaves something open to do another sequel.
Well, of course.
The other thing is, what was up with the music? I understand this was Christmas, but when I watched the first Best Man, they had a Lauryn Hill, Bob Marley joint. They had, I'm trying to think who else was on. There was a couple of other songs on there that actually made radio and made sense for that time. And I just didn't, who did the scoring? It was horrible. There were a couple of times in the movie where the scene would literally fade to black with no sound, and then we get the next picture establishing shot. And I'm like, who's directing this? Why would you let that happen? And then when you get to the stories, some of the stuff just didn't make sense. And I guess we can spoil some of the stuff.
Yeah, but at this point.
Merch was having issues with his wife. I'm like, okay, yeah, you can be a little heated with that. But how the hell would you ever decide to confront her on it while she giving you dome? That just made no sense.
Remind me of this? I was totally forgot. What character are you talking about? What's the actor? Tell me the actor's name.
Merch. The dude from Oz. Tanks.
Okay. Yeah.
The one who married the stripper.
Right.
Why in the hell would you ever decide, let me confront my wife about possibly getting paid to give head while you getting some head? Like, what? And then, like I said, I mentioned it in Sean's column where they retcon Mia and Shelby as being sorority sisters because they needed her there. I'm just like, come on, you couldn't have thought of something better than that. I didn't get why Sanaa Lathan's character would get mad. People were saying that because he kissed him. But first of all, why is she still upset with the fact that he might have had something with this chick? It's been, 13 years, not only in real time, but in the movie time. You're married. You're about to have a kid. Why are you tripping on this girl still? Like, aren't characters supposed to show growth, not regress?
Some so that was supposed like that, to
be there. Like, why is she still mad about that?
Is Sanaa Lathan married to Taye Diggs in this movie?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So why is she still mad about? Why is she mad about Jordan? Why? Is
well,
she
I would only in a defense. I would say maybe because he hasn't seen her in 13 years. Maybe she's afraid of he sees her, it rekindle feelings or something.
Okay, that might be true if he hadn't proposed to her in front of Jordan at the wedding.
Again, you're talking about rational thoughts from a woman.
Okay. Well,
no, he's talking about late screenwriting.
Well, yeah. here's the deal. Right. If the film had been made 14 years after the first one, it had been made, 3 or 4 or 5 years, it all would have made sense. A lot of the things that you mentioned, I mentioned in my review, like Shelby being there. There was no reason for Shelby to be there other than they wanted to reunite the entire cast. I know they made the little throwaway line that her and Mia were sorority sisters, but I don't remember that from the first film, and I watched it the same day that I watched the sequel. So it didn't make sense to me either that Sanaa Lathan would have been able to travel with her high-risk pregnancy. She was already going to have, a breech birth. So I don't know any doctor that would say, yeah, go ahead, go off, your thing.
Weren't Sanaa Lathan and Taye Diggs, I think they were in New York because he was a professor at NYU. So I didn't see that.
I don't know how far they were. I didn't even know where Chestnut and his wife lived. I didn't get a spatial relation. So I didn't know how far they actually traveled. But it would still seem that she,
just in general.
Yeah, I mean, you would think she'd
been like
maybe on bed rest. Yeah, if she's that close and that kind of thing. What else did you mention? The leaving open for a sequel. Well, they kind of had to at this point because they don't want to wait another 14 years to do another one. So let's leave it kind of open ended. And if this makes money, which it's already doubled the original's film's gross at this point, so there will be a sequel. You can bet on that.
My other thing is like when I was kind of mad at the end of the film. It's like just go ahead and reveal that Shelby's daughter is Q. It's like, come on now, you know that's what's gonna happen.
What?
I don't understand why did they not do that. It's like why would you? And if that's not gonna be the case, why would you have those little plot lines where you see that there's this connection? She goes to sit next to him, and we don't get that resolution that that's his kid.
Well, this is the Empire Strikes Back, so they'll cover that.
You know, I kind of think that they probably did have that filmed, but as you saw toward the end, there were so many endings here. They probably just say, you know what, just cut that. It's already too, we'll be tying up. They're already tying up way too many storylines at the end. And that'd have just been one more that have been just pushing it, in my opinion.
I thought the football scene went way too long, too. I'm like, this is not a sports movie. Let's move this thing.
What did that have to do with anything? That was another one. Like, if you cut that out, nobody, that had no bearing on the film.
Is this when can you use a cell phone on the sideline of a professional football or any kind of professional game?
Oh, Lord.
And just walk up to the star player. Hey, man, your wife's calling here. Take the phone.
Yeah, your wife's on the phone. Yeah, can't do that.
Wasn't there also like a elongated like prayer scene or something like that?
Yeah,
that's the other thing I was thinking. Like, he gets on Tyler Perry, and I'm like, dude, you had like three musical sections and a church scene. Two. So what are you talking about?
See, Tyler Perry's films deal with. I'm thinking of me. What was that film he put out with Rick Fox? I can't remember. And Angela Bassett. The last one I saw.
Meet the Browns.
Yeah. Kind of deals with more down home Negroes and at least Malcolm, he's talking about Northern Negroes. I don't know.
It has some good stuff in there, but it's just like, you know, if you're gonna go ahead and throw shade at Tyler Perry, you know, your film wasn't much better. And especially when you judge it based on what you already did, it's just a total 180. From the original.
All right.
I like the first one a lot. I actually have the DVD.
First one's good. It's a good film.
All right. The Best Man Holiday. Everybody's got an opinion. I still like the movie. I agree. It has problems, though, but it's watchable. Yeah. It's watchable.
I gave it a marginal thumbs up.
Yeah. I give it the side eye.
You give the side eye. All right. So real quick. Did anybody go shopping for Black Friday?
Hell no, man.
Yes.
Oh.
You can't go outside with those crazy people.
Did you have a good experience or a bad one, Sean?
My experience, I went Friday afternoon about 1 o'clock, went to Walmart, okay. went to Fry's, got a couple of Blu-rays that I wanted, and I was out. I had no, and actually at Fry's, I ordered online, so I just had to go and just pick it up.
Oh, nice.
So I wasn't out with the nuts, so to speak. I was just out with normal shopping. So
I went out Thursday, probably around 8:30, right after I left my mom's house. She lives across the street from a Target, so we decided to walk over there. And I had never been to any sort of Black Friday or Thanksgiving sale thing. There was a ton of people in the store, but I will say that it was very orderly and it wasn't like crazy like those videos. And I just wanted to just walk in there just to see what it was all about. I had no intention to buy anything. And walked in there, and you see they have, like, all the little deals. They sort of put everything sort of up front for you so you don't have to go throughout the store to get it.
Yeah.
And, they had all that. And I walked back to the electronics area, and there was this crazy zigzagging line through electronics. I don't know exactly what they were buying, but there was mad people over there. I was just like, oof, I'm not going over that area. It's crazy. I ended up buying a microwave. They had $40 microwaves. And I needed a microwave. And so I ended up getting, all right, ended up buying that and ended up buying a vacuum cleaner.
Whoa.
All right.
I ended up buying
Worm. But real quick, I was just going to say,
the
thing that was crazy, though, was just the line to buy something. It zigzagged through multiple aisles of Target, but it moved pretty fast, but it was not crazy, and it was painless. So go ahead. It's yours.
Oh, no, I ended up getting, I got the Terminator Anthology. It's all four movies for like $10 on Blu-ray. Comes in a nice little pack. about Star Trek Into Darkness. That was like $3 on Blu-ray. The Matrix, all three movies, they were packaged together. That was $5. And Argo was also like $5. So they were all on Blu-ray. So that was what I went to get, and I didn't wait in line for it. I just went in, found them, bought them, and I was out.
Nice. Yeah, there was a lot of great movie deals if you like buying movies, like $4,
yeah.
$3.
Yeah, Blu-ray. Yeah.
All right. I wanted to get into this big topic here, and we wanted to talk about African-American cinema in 2013 at the box office. So Mr. Sean Hill has the information for us.
I've got the numbers. All right, so I want to kind of start with, want to give a history as far as, I'm going to list the top 10 grossing black movies of all time. Now, when I say black movies, they are black headline, not necessarily black directed, but they're starring black people. So we'll start with number 10, and I'll give the number amount, but I won't give the number amount for all of them. So at number 10 is Are We There Yet? Is the number 10 highest grossing black film of all time, raked in $97 million at the box office. Next is Little Man. No comment on that one.
Is this Marlon? Marlon Wayne?
Yes.
Wow.
Yes. Yes. Next is Ray. And then number 7 is Boomerang. Number 6 is Big Mama's House 2.
Whoa.
Yes. Yeah.
I'm getting depressed over here.
Dude. Yeah. It's really not too much better. Number 5 is Bad Boys, the original.
Okay.
Number 4 is Dreamgirls. Number 3 is Big Mama's House, the original. Number 2 is Bad Boys 2. And then number 1 grossing $288 million total, Coming to America is the top grossing black film of all time. Now,
I'm going to ask you a quick question. Is The Color Purple and not on the list?
It's not on the list. Not on the top 10, no.
Interesting.
Go ahead. Which
Pursuit of Happiness, that wasn't classified as a black film?
It was not in the top 10. I don't know what it made, but it was not in the top 10.
What was the number one again? Oh, Coming to America.
Coming to America. Okay. Yeah.
That's adjusted, right? Is that adjusted?
No, that's not adjusted. That was the gross at the time. So
Coming to America made what?
$288 million.
Wow. Nice.
Noticeably absent from the list is Spike Lee, who we talked about. His highest grossing film is Inside Man, which made, I think, $88 million total.
Wow.
We'll move to so this year currently, we'll start with, I guess, the bottom. Coming in at number 12, looks like, is Tyler Perry's Meet the Peoples, which is only made $9 million this year. But yeah, now this one bothers me a little bit. Fruitvale Station, after that, it's made only $16 million. Baggage Claim is next, $21 million. Yeah, it's a terrible film. 12 Years a Slave is $30 million. Let Me Explain is at $32 million.
Wait, who's in that?
That's Kevin Hart.
Oh,
that's his stand-up.
Okay.
Yeah. A Haunted House.
Yeah.
Is $40 million.
Oh Lord,
that's my movie.
Yes. The Call, $51 million.
That's considered a black film?
Well, I listed it because it's black headline. I mean, it's got three black stars: Halle Berry, Morris Chestnut, and another black person that I can't remember now.
Yeah.
So I did list it. Temptation, which is one of the worst movies I've seen in a long time, but $51 million. Best Man Holiday, and this, of course, number is still ongoing, but it's at $54 million. After Earth, black headline once again, $60 million. Two Guns, we consider that black headline with Denzel, $75 million.
I just saw that last night.
How'd you like it?
It was all right.
Yeah, that's how I felt about it. 42.
It's on a comic book?
Yeah. Well, I knew that, yes.
All right,
Well, I mean, I knew it after I saw the film because they did the comic book stuff at the end. 42 is at 95 million. And the top grossing black film of the year, you guys can probably guess. You want to take a guess at what it is?
The Butler.
You're correct, sir.
There you go.
Oprah Winfrey's The Butler.
That's what it's called? I thought it was...
No, I'm being tongue in cheek. So as a total, black films this year have made $655 million at the box office. So, I don't have numbers as far as, you know, where we are as far as is this the best year, but just from looking at it, I would say so.
Wow.
This is probably one of the best years. I wish Fruitvale Station and 12 Years a Slave were a little bit higher.
They're not wide released, though, I don't think.
Yeah. And then, you know, we could argue After Earth, is that really a black film? But you got two black stars who are pretty much in the movie the entire time.
Yeah.
So I would say, yeah, although the movie was not that good. For the most part, though, the movies that are on the list, you know, fairly good. Fruitvale Station, 12 Years a Slave, Let Me Explain, The Call, Two Guns, and 42 were all pretty good.
I forgot about 42.
I haven't seen that yet.
It's good. Yeah, that one came out early in the year, so a lot of people have forgotten about it at this point. But it's definitely a worth seeing if you haven't seen it already.
Wait a minute. I didn't hear the phrase Django Unchained in there.
Django came out December 2012.
Never mind.
Well, I think one thing to say is that all timeless, was it like two Martin Lawrence movies?
Four.
Four?
Oh, Bad Boys 2.
That's right.
Big Mama's House and Big Mama's House 2, yeah.
Damn, Martin doing his thing.
I mean, he's got more than Eddie. Eddie only has two, Boomerang and Coming to America.
Wow.
But they don't consider Beverly Hills Cop.
Yeah, come on now. Cops, 48 Hours?
It wasn't. They were not in the top 10.
Wow.
Probably if you adjusted it, I would imagine.
Maybe I could go back and do a kind of a follow-up to see, you know, the films you guys have mentioned. I'll go and see what those numbers are, and, you know, maybe we could revisit it another time. But this was the top 10, which kind of surprises me. I mean, especially Are We There Yet and Little Man. I mean,
Little Man.
People, I mean, I've never seen Little Man.
I haven't either.
People really went to see that.
Was Malcolm X even on the list?
Malcolm X is not on the list either. It probably come in at like number 14 or 15, just looking at what it made. I think I still have it pulled up. Let me look here. Malcolm X made 48 million.
Boys in the Hood or something like that.
Are you kidding me? 48 million.
Mm-hmm. That doesn't surprise me.
But that movie was marketed to death.
Well, but you got to think by 1993 standard, that's actually really good.
It's the second highest grossing film. If you want, I'll run down the top five. Number one's Inside Man. Number two, Malcolm X. Number three, Kings of Comedy. Number four, Jungle Fever. And number five, Do the Right Thing.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, now, what year is that now?
Which film?
Malcolm X.
Malcolm X came out November 20th of 92.
So yeah, okay. 48 million in 92 for a black film? Yeah, that's actually pretty good. A black film about Malcolm X on top.
Right.
and a 3-hour black film about Malcolm X, too. So you got to remember, too, you know, with it being that long, that there were less times that it could actually screen. Probably only two or three screenings a day for that.
So the moral of the story is if you want to be successful at the box office, you must be a coon.
Hire Martin Lawrence, apparently, yes.
I'm joking. I like Martin. But Baby's Mama, I mean, Big Mama's. Now, I could see maybe Big Mama House, the first one, possibly. But the second one is horrible.
I'd rather Blue Streak on there.
I just can't believe a Haunted House has made more money than, you know, Fruitvale Station or, you know.
Oh, Haunted House was a wide-released movie, though.
Yeah.
I love that movie. I don't care what they say.
Michael Dean, you did not just say that.
I went to go see that, and I damn near had a heart attack. I was laughing so hard. I was crying. I was in convulsions, man. It was hysterical.
You're being facetious,
I'm
right?
I'm totally serious. That movie is one of the funniest movies I've ever seen.
Wow.
I don't know what it was. I was not a big Marlon fan or anything.
Okay. Without incriminating yourself.
Sure, go ahead.
Without incriminating yourself, was this before or after that legalization in Seattle?
Hilarious. I don't partake, so. it is a dumb movie, and it's a comedy. It's a dumb comedy, and it's hilarious to me. It's wrong. I love that movie. I can't wait for the sequel.
And I forgot to mention, guys. I forgot Black Nativity. It's right there with Old Boy. It is tanked, and it is tanked terribly. Yeah, and I the film's not perfect. I like the film. It's got a great message. It's got some great musical numbers. It's rated PG. You know, so there's no cursing, no violence, no N-word. It's, you know, it's got positive, you know, we're all often complaining about there no, you know, positive images of us on the screen. For once, we have a film that has that, but no one's going to see it. So I hope people that are within the sound of my voice now will go see that film, support it. If not, there'll be more Tyler Perry. Hey, it's my first Tyler Perry diss of the show.
Well, the other hand, there's a lot of movies out right now. I mean, obviously, The Hunger Games. I think everybody went to go see that.
Yeah.
Irregardless. Frozen, the Disney, you know, you're going to send the kids that. Thor is still, it's up there, right?
I just say the demographic that, you know, will normally go see this kind of film, and maybe because a certain name is in front of it, maybe that's why people aren't going to see it.
Well, I think The Best Man is still relatively new, and that's still killing them, so I think they're gonna go see that.
Yeah, I think this is a better holiday film and has a better holiday message than The Best Man. Like I say, it's definitely not a perfect film, but it's worth seeing for the message alone. So like I said, I just hope maybe it'd be one of those that'll grow with word of mouth, grow over time. But it's only made $2 million since Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll get yanked out of theaters. It'll get relegated to, you know, maybe two showings a day or something.
Yeah, so
it's just too many movies out. All right. Yeah, well, the one movie that unfortunately is only playing in, looks like, four theaters, but Mandela. I do want to see that one. I don't know when it hits wide release.
I think sometime, I want to say the 18th or somewhere in that area.
It has done $30,000 the other day.
30,000?
Well, it's only playing in four theaters.
So. Yeah, it's probably for the Oscars. They got to get it out. It's got to play in certain cities to be Oscar eligible.
But yeah, I definitely want to see that. Man, anything else? I'm forgetting other things. Anything else anybody wants to bring up?
Well, I could say we don't have to spend any time on it, but I got around to seeing All-Star Superman, animated movie.
And, yeah.
Yeah. Maybe that wasn't a big hit over there, was it?
Apparently not.
Yeah, I saw, Mike, you saw that, right?
I did, yes.
Did you like that?
It was okay. In comparison to the book, I didn't like it. But it was all right. I don't know if Big Sexy, did you see that movie?
I saw it, you know, and to me it was an adaptation of the book. There are a lot of things, you know, it captured in the book. I mean, it wasn't up there with the New Frontier presentation, but it was pretty good.
Man, I thought it was all over the place. I didn't enjoy it at all.
Well, I didn't like the artwork, though, because the artwork, you know, was too much like Frank Quietly, and I don't like Frank Quietly.
Hmm. What?
Yeah, I said it. Not a Frank Quietly fan.
Wow. Okay.
All of his characters look the same. They all have that little gas face with the fat lips and the fat head. It just doesn't work for me.
I have to agree. Everybody did kind of look the same. The same eyebrow structure and all that. And
yeah.
They all had thick lips. I hate to say that.
They're all eating lemons or something in there, man. I don't know what's going on.
And what was with Jimmy Olsen wearing a dress? I didn't get that.
Oh, Jimmy had something to say.
Um, Did anybody see there's a new Amazing Spider-Man 2, I guess that's a banner that hangs in certain theaters. And it shows that there are basically three threats in this movie. There's Electro, Green Goblin, and the Rhino, if I'm not mistaken.
The Rhino?
Yeah, it's like I think it's the ultimate sort of version of Rhino. It's more like a more mechanical sort of thing or something. But
I saw the picture you're talking about. I couldn't make out any. What I saw, the photo was up, the banner was up on the ceiling or something.
Yeah, yeah.
I couldn't make anything out, but I sincerely hope that all three of those villains are not going to be in the next Spider-Man movie.
That's too many. You're right.
Well, I'm pretty sure they will be since it's on that picture.
That's going to be crazy.
Didn't they make that mistake with Spider-Man 3 having too many villains?
Yeah, we'll see what they do. I mean, it's interesting that they're going to choose to go that route again.
They probably saw it as it's not the fact that it was too many villains. It's we didn't have the right ones.
And wow. That clears it up.
Well, I read that the Rhino is going to be, and I forget where I heard this, but someone did an interview with Paul Giamatti, who's playing the Rhino, and they said that the Rhino is more of like a henchman, not really a villain.
Hmm, that's possible.
Awesome. Well, I'm not excited about that at all.
Okay.
Well, I don't think the Rhino isn't really that great of a character. You know, he's good for, you know, Spidey to bounce off of. You know, that's an old wrestling term, to bounce off of while he stands there and lumbers. But I mean, as far as, you know, he doesn't really bring much to the table. He's
The Rhino is basically Spider-Man's version of the Juggernaut.
And not even that good of a form.
Yeah.
All right, fellas. I think we are geeked out at this point. We are going to leave things. But before we go, I want to give everybody a chance to give a shout-out to themselves and where people can find you. So, Q-Storm, where can the people find you at?
You can go to my blog, qstorm.com/lightningstrikes. You can go to my Twitter account, QStorm, at QStorm3476. Go to my Facebook page, QStorm1. And you can go to my website, QStorm.com. I've been very busy lately. I'll be posting up some new videos if you want to check out how I shoot and how I edit and how I direct. There you go.
All right. Mr. Sean Hill, where can the people find you?
All right. You can find all of my movie reviews at Hill Street Views. With the Z, .blogspot.com. Also do video reviews as well. My partner, Cassidy Early, we're at Real Movie Talk on YouTube. Also, we're on Facebook, Real Movie Talk as well. Real is R-E-E-L.
All right, Mr. Big Sexy and Suck, where can we find you at?
Well, you know, I'm still just getting my NFL agent thing off the ground, so I'm still on Facebook and Twitter. But I will be getting the website up hopefully in a couple of months, so we can all take a look at it then.
All right. And Mr. Anthony, where can we find you?
You find me at knockoutnation.com. Working on a new column for next week, as well as 411mania.com. New column should be up tomorrow night.
Oh, okay. Now you said Knockout Nation. You ain't a part of that knockout game thing, are you?
Y'all
know that's a myth, right? Whoa, say that again?
There were a couple of people I wanted to swing on this past week, so I might partake.
Wow. What were you saying?
It's a myth.
Think it's a myth? Well, I say this. There is a video that I just saw this today. It's a young black girl. You see her run up on an elderly white dude. He's doing his gardening or something. He just kicks him in the back.
Wait, that still ain't knockout. I mean, come on. Well, it's again, like they're trying to make everything be the knockout game. You know, somebody said somebody got
is it different because she didn't use her fist?
She's just a delinquent kid that saw an old white man bent over and decided, wouldn't it be funny if I kicked him in the butt and toppled him over
and filmed?
That's not the same thing.
Well, again, I agree. It's not the exact same thing as a knockout. She didn't knock him out. She drop kicked him from the behind, and she also admitted that she went up to a person's house, rang the doorbell, and slapped the shit out of him when he answered.
What the hell is up with snitching on yourself, though? Why the hell would you do that?
Again, here's the thing. So I don't necessarily think it's all a myth. And even if it is, so the one part I've heard is, you know, they're using footage from old times. Yes, I agree. That is a problem. But do you think this initial thing, how it started, was from footage from old days? Or is this whole thing some sort of plot against black youth?
Well, somebody made an excellent point. If this thing is so rampant and going on, why are there no pictures of victims? Why are there no pictures of people that's been arrested doing this? You know, they're saying that this is happening in New Jersey so rampant, but nobody's putting their hand up like, oh, it happened to me.
I just saw the report this morning. They had interviews with both victims. They were two older white men. They were like 70 years old. And they had the girl. She got arrested. She's going to do like 21 days. She's 15, young black girl. My thing is this. Myth or not, I don't think it's a myth. It may not be as big as people say. I agree with that. It's a possibility. But there is a problem when we got kids. Well, I don't care what race they are, but you got kids out there hitting or beating on older people. Like, I just don't understand that. Like, and then filming it. Like, why is that cool? Why, like, I don't understand. How do you get any stripes for that? Because those people can't put up a fight.
Because Q at World Star Hip Hop made millions of dollars doing this, and people want to be on World Star.
Is Q's fault? Really?
I'll put some of the blame there. Because at any moment, he can just shut all that down and say, we're not uploading these fight videos.
So his site, his little website is that powerful?
Dude, yes.
Wow.
That's so much powerful, but in the sense that you got these dumb kids that feel like, okay, this is how I can be famous. Let me film this hot mess going on. Let me film me doing this attacking. And what's the thing they got to shout? World Star.
So what, do we just edit down any sort of media or business that becomes so popular that weak-minded people can't control themselves? So we got to shut down the business because they're affected by it?
I don't know, Mike, because the business on World Star is aimed directly at that segment.
Yes.
So when you, but when nothing you aim wrong with directly that. At that segment, which is fine, if you want to exploit it, that's fine, but you have to know this is what's going to happen. You know, you have to know this is going to happen.
So there wasn't, that violence only started with web. How did World Star come into existence then if it is creating the violence? Where did it get all the footage before?
I don't think it's creating it. I think it's definitely enhancing it, though.
It's promoting it.
Should we cancel definitely. Out car phone? I mean, the phones on the on cell phone, the cameras?
No. I don't agree with any type of censorship that is forced on anybody. But the people who are running World Star need to realize it's like the same thing with all the afternoon bullshit reality talk shows. Do you know if you're going to go on that show, there's going to be drama, there's going to be baby mama issues, the whole nine. All they do is perpetuate that bullshit because they aim at that same group. If you take the shows away, does that group go away? No. But does the coverage of that group and the romanticism of that group go away? Yes.
Would there be a problem with World Star said we're not going to accept any videos where people are being harmed or in danger?
Well, no, that's no problem. I just, to me, again, when you get to telling somebody what they can't show, it's going to start there, but it's not going to finish there. And at a certain point, it's going to come to somebody else that you like, and they're going to be saying, well, this violence on this program is detrimental to young people. Can we not show the violence, please? Like, where does it stop? You know what I mean? At a certain point, everybody got to be held accountable for their own actions. I agree. People are influenced by media. Where do you stop?
I would go with that if World Star, you said, oh, they're just doing this. Oh, they're just showing what people are ready to upload. However, there was the video of the Knockout King for the bus driving Knockout King guy. Uppercut guy.
Whoa. That wasn't a knockout. That was a fight.
See, here you go.
But I'm just saying, that dude. Okay, the person who filmed it, they uploaded it to YouTube.
Right.
World Star ripped it, put their little logos all up on it.
Which do you think has a bigger reach, YouTube or World Star?
YouTube.
Okay, so are we going to take YouTube down?
However,
I guarantee YouTube, you ain't taking Google's not going to take YouTube down. I guarantee you that.
That's true, but what I'm saying, my point was, is that WorldStar then went to YouTube and forced to get that person who initially uploaded it take down, said, "Oh, this is our footage, our fight." So they're claiming it for their own monetary value, and there's a problem in that.
Yeah, but that's nothing to do with this. That's a copyright issue you're talking
but
about.
But no, my point being is that it's one thing for them to say, "Oh, we're just uploading videos; it's not our thing." But it's like, no, you're monetizing it, and you're taking whole ownership of it when you're putting in copyright claims for stuff that's not even yours.
Well, if it's not their copyright, they'll eventually lose that fight.
Exactly.
But YouTube, you don't think YouTube isn't monetizing those videos? That's why you think Google got so much money.
Yeah, shoot.
Well, one thing that kind of is disturbing to me now, going back to the bus driver incident, when you have these knockout bullshit people, those aren't fights. Those are assaults. If you have two people who want to square up and have a problem and resolve it that way and it gets filmed, so be it. But when you get people, young people like Aquanisha, whatever the fuck her name was, rolling up on old folks and just smacking people, nah, man, that's wrong. That's just flat out wrong. And it shouldn't be promoted. Now, Tommy, I hate to bring Tommy up, pointing out the names of another girl who was doing the same thing, Sharquita or something like that.
Yeah, she's all over trend. She's trending on Twitter. We're not going to shut Twitter down because they're trending her and giving her fame, are we?
Where are we going to get how about these names, man? Damn.
Oh, I know.
That's a whole other show.
That's Afro Nerd.
Yes, and I was like, I don't know if I'm more upset the fact that she sucker punched her, or that she kicked her while she was down, or that her mama named her Sharkeisha.
That's the one. That's the issue there. Sharkeisha. Damn.
But yeah, I think there's a deeper problem than the social media outlets. Again, you're not going to shut them down. You're not going to shut down Twitter because people are trending on there for illegal stuff. You're not going to shut down YouTube. You're not going to shut down the smaller business, WorldStar. And if you do, hundreds of others will pop up and take their place. It's the same thing the music industry tried to do, shutting down piracy. You ain't going to stop it. That's a part of our reality. You got to deal with it. The people have to be smarter, right? Because you're not going to stop them giving us cell phones to film it to begin with. And there would, again, most you would argue that most of these people are doing this so they can film it. And if they didn't have access to cameras, then they wouldn't film it. But I guarantee you AT&T, all of them are not going to take those phone features off of those phones. Apple will not turn those, is not going to turn it off. So what do we do? You know,
I think it would mean a lot if someone like a WorldStar Hip Hop, whether we can abolish it altogether or, like you say, 10 other, you know, just like Hydra, cut off one head, 10 more will take its place. That may be, but WorldStar Hip Hop will take a big step in setting a precedent.
Well, it won't. See, I don't think it won't set a precedent at all.
Setting a precedent.
It won't set a precedent.
Wait a minute. They will set a precedent for saying, we're not going to tolerate that kind of behavior, and we don't want you sending in these types of videos.
Did Napster set a precedent?
Say what?
Did Napster set a precedent?
Did Napster set a precedent?
Yeah, when they decided to go against what they did, and they did they set a precedent?
I would say yeah.
And where are they at?
They were.
What did precedent matter? Did it change anything, or did it get more crazy?
Mike, it may have gotten more crazy, but my point is, at least the people at WorldStar can at least make an attempt to save not anything else for publicity to say, we have done our part to try to quell this stupidity.
But again,
it's not all about the bottom line every time.
Well, I get to me it is because their bottom line is to be a business. It's not to be a moral support anybody.
YouTube, you don't see a lot of, at least I could
actually
be wrong.
You do. That's where they get them from. Go ahead.
Well, WorldStar Hip Hop, every time I see someone posting a video, which is how I'm drawn to any of these videos, if it's something violent, 9 times out of 10 is WorldStar Hip Hop.
But WorldStar Hip Hop is niched to a small segment where YouTube is everything.
And YouTube, what does that matter?
Well, it matters because you don't pull up there's no phone that I know of that comes with WorldStar built into it, right? All those footages that are on WorldStar are more than likely probably 80% or 90 from YouTube, right? So they're already existed before they got the World Star.
How do I know that to be true?
Well, how do you know it's not? You can either trust what I'm saying or you don't have to, but I'm just giving my opinion on the matter. What I'm saying is, go ahead.
A lot of times, like someone else on the panel said, when you see a video, someone screaming "World Star."
No, so I'm not arguing that they're not saying that. But again, I go back. My original thing I was saying is, when you buy a cell phone, does it have World Star built into the phone?
No.
Okay, so where do you think they're uploading those videos to? Because remember, these are not tech geniuses here. These are people using their cell phone to film video, and they have to get that footage to the internet. How do you think they're getting? How do you think 90% of those people are getting those video clips to the internet?
Well, without any proof in front of me, I believe most of those people are shooting them and uploading them directly to World Star Hip Hop.
Again, ask yourself this. Mm-hmm. I'm being very clear. Every phone, every Android, I can speak for a fact. I don't know about iPhones, but every Android phone comes with YouTube pre-built in, right? And when you film something, the upload option 99% of the time is to go to where? YouTube. That's built into the functionality of the phone. Not WorldStar, not Instagram, not all these other ones. So my thing to tell you is that 99% of these people are uploading those videos to YouTube.
That's a valid point. But point of record, Mr. Big Sexy, Mr. Judge, that is circumstantial evidence.
Well, that's not circumstantial. That's a reality. That's how it gets online. It doesn't get online through you. It doesn't get online through WorldStar. It gets online through YouTube. And my point to say that is to say that it's sitting on YouTube. Now, again, YouTube is everything. So there's such a vast variety of stuff that it is not curated for you to see. All that WorldStar is doing is curating videos that 80% are already on YouTube, and they're pulling them to put them on there, or pulling them from TMZ and other outlets.
Mike, I think that's good speculation. It's not proof.
It's not speculation, because that's what WorldStar is. It only curates to a certain demographic of videos, and it's in its title. It says WorldStar Hip Hop. It doesn't say WorldStar Pop or whatever sort of subgenre that it's talking about. It is talking about hip hop. So again, it only shows you a certain segregated form of video.
All I'm saying is that I have no reason not to believe that the people who are taking these videos are then taking their phones, syncing them up, and uploading them directly to World Star Hip Hop.
Well, again, if you look at World Star, which I advise you to go do, there is no, you can't go from your phone to WorldStar. It's not possible.
But you can go from your phone to a laptop or your desktop and then upload it to WorldStar.
Now, if you've looked at some of these people that are on those phones, and you really think that they got laptops and phones to be going through all that, I have more power to you. But I'm telling you right now, Shark Eater and all them people are not doing that. So they don't got all that.
I don't know that for a fact.
Okay, well, hey, I ain't arguing with you, man.
You make a valid point, though. I'm not gonna lie. You make a valid point.
Anyway, we all over the place. You got a little extra there, ladies and gentlemen. But we up out of here, Sharkita, all our people. With okay, that, but go ahead.
Here's the question, though. Who you got in the fight, Sharkeesha or Jade?
Who's Jade?
Who's Jade?
You don't remember? Oh, I gotta send you the link. That's the chick that was in the she was in the girls' locker room and they were trying to punk her and she just started putting hands on this girl, whooped that girl's ass for like five minutes. Wow. Hey, girl, I mean, she whooped her ass so bad she kept stopping, like, wait a minute, let me look in the, look, wait, you got me in my eye. I'll send you the link.
Terrible.
Did you guys see, I just posted a video about, I don't think it was in this country, I could be wrong, but it's this video of this guy who walks into what I'm guessing is a subway tunnel, and it's this, I think she's Asian, she's standing against this, on the wall with her cell phone, and the guy tries to steal her cell phone, and walks off. And this guy proceeds, this the woman proceeds to beat this guy's ass.
I saw that.
I was like, yeah, knockout game ain't going down with everybody. I mean, she went right for the nuts, okay? And dude, wow. Dude dropped. It was a wrap.
All I will say is this. All we're seeing with these videos is only the beginning. It's going to get way more crazy with these videos before it bottoms out. That's what I feel. We're in the early stages.
Yeah, there's that fight I just sent y'all.
Oh, okay. Check it out. All right, fellas. We should wrap it up here. But definitely see you guys next week, and we'll send out some topics, all right?
All right.
All right, boys.
All right. Thanks, ladies and gentlemen. We'll see you later. Ooh, you shock it, shake it, baby. Electric plate again.